Hello and welcome to Lessons from Loss, the podcast in which we share our experiences of loss and, more importantly, what we learn from them that now positively guides our lives today. I'm your host, Rachel Smith, and each episode I chat with a different guest. And I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the courage and vulnerability of all my guests in sharing their very personal experiences, but also the impact that hearing these stories and experiences may have on you, the listener. So please take care as you listen. So today I'm super happy to be chatting to Kirsty Jandrell. It's been a little while in being able to set this up, so I'm delighted that we finally got together. So Kirsty is a fellow podcaster, a channel, guide and facilitator of multiple modalities to help beautiful souls around the world to get clear on what their true life, true dream life is, and to guide them into actually creating it and living it. This spiritual work came into fruition following two major life challenges in a short space of time, becoming a first-time mum at 46 and then losing both her parents suddenly on the same day just a year later. And these served as a wake-up call to follow her heart and to help others do the same. So welcome along, Kirsty.
Oh, hi, Rachel. Thank you so much. I'm so thrilled and honoured to be here. And it has been a while in the making, hasn't it? But it's all down to divine timing, isn't it?
So absolutely. Yeah, I am a firm believer in that. Yes. And it's really great to see your podcast finally out in the world, because when we first chatted way back last year, it was in its very early stages of planning, of being thought about. So how's that experience been for you?
Oh, thank you. It's so much fun. And it happened really organically, actually. My partner my podcast partner, Kate Rashbrough, and I met during our angel teaching training. We're both angel healers and teachers. This came together, the Angels, Magic and Joy podcast. And it really is a joy to do. So it's so much fun and get to sort of really meet so many interesting people and have so many lovely stories to share. And yeah, like you, I mean, the purpose of the podcast is to uplift and inspire and bring a little bit of joy and lightness to people's lives, really. So very similar, I think, Rachel, to your intention.
Yeah, and it is a lovely podcast to listen to. I've heard a couple of episodes, and yeah, but it's very very uplifting, very joyful. So yeah, keep up that great work. But thank you so much for coming on and chatting to me today about your experiences and how they really sort of led you to being where you are now. And crikey, losing both parents on the same day, yet I understand sort of almost independent of each other. You know, how do you even start to comprehend that when you're in those early throes of motherhood and all the challenges that that brings? Because when you're in your mid-40s, it's kind of relatively young to be losing both parents, but then conversely relatively old to being a first-time mum. So it's kind of like a collision of two life, big life-changing events that for most people happen years, if not decades apart. So, you know, that just must have, well, I can't imagine what that time must have been like. So maybe that's a good place to start. You know, maybe with being like an older first-time mum, because that's sort of like that was that first life change. How was that for you?
Yeah, thank you, Rachel. Well, yeah, I mean, looking back, I think, gosh, that was an intense time. And of course it was. Looking at being a first-time mum at 46, I mean, I was absolutely, me and my husband were absolutely blessed, because we had been actively, consciously trying to bring this beautiful soul through for about 6 years. So when she finally arrived, it was just my biggest joy, really. And she still is. However, at 46, of course, it brings different challenges and initiations than it perhaps would do earlier on. And both my husband and I are run our own businesses as well, or and you know still do. So that was a challenge, but a complete joy. And looking back, I think one of the things I'm really grateful for is the fact that my mum and stepdad actually got to meet her and adored her and spent 18 months actually with her, and poured so much love into her, and there was that real soul connection between the three of them. So that was so beautiful to see. Whereas my husband, he lost his father a couple of years earlier, and you know, they never had that contact. So I'll be eternally grateful for that. And yeah, and moving on to my mum and stepdad, it was a bizarre event, and I remember back to the day after and the couple of days after when it was I'm an only child, and I'm blessed to have a stepsister and brother, and between the three of us, we of course, because it was such a they both went on the same day, we literally had to let everybody know about their passing, and because they were such sociable souls, they had a lot of friends, and it was a long list of people to tell. And I remember sort of, you know, with each call, being very mindful to try and lessen, dampen the shock for their friends, because of course to lose one of them is enough in and of itself. To lose both, it's sort of, you know, it's such a, you know, such a double sort of blow, really. So moving to that, it was, you know, at the time it was such a shock. They were both healthy, ostensibly. They led such a active lives. They were involved in so many different social groups, and they were always laughing. I mean, that was the thing with my mum and stepdad. They were always laughing. And it came as a total shock. How it happened was basically my stepdad had a heart attack. And my mum, bless her, managed to call the emergency services. But when they arrived, we pieced together afterwards, she'd actually fallen, unfortunately, down the stairs. And when they arrived, she was on the floor, managed to let them in, but then had suffered a cardiac arrest herself. So they literally passed within 30 minutes of each other.
Goodness.
So it was sort of almost, you know, surreal, really, in that respect. And because, of course, they went together, there was no way initially that we could be contacted as the three children. So they passed away in the early evening at tea time. And I got the call from my stepsister at 1:30 in the morning, the following morning. And somehow the police had managed to find her number and contact her, and bless her, she had to call myself and my stepbrother. So yeah, it was a complete shock. You know, it wasn't as though they had both been through a long illness. And of course, there at the time that was an incredible shock. But looking back, it was also such a blessing because they didn't suffer, and I know this is potentially sounds a little bit like a cliche, but they certainly didn't suffer. I'm sure my mum suffered in that 10 minutes before she actually passed, but you know, they didn't have a long protracted illness. They both went together. They were absolute soulmates, and they would have been useless without each other. They really would have, you know, been that really would have been, you know, inconceivable for them. So there are so many blessings, you know, in retrospect. But yeah, at the time it was just a complete shock. So yeah, And this, and we're coming up to sort of 5 years now. It was actually April the 1st, and my step father in particular was such a joker. I mean, he was always joking, and my stepsister said, "Well, trust my dad to go on April the 1st." That was his sort of joke from the other side, really. So, but yeah, and then it was sort of a process of, I don't know whether you found this, Rachel, but you don't really comprehend the enormity. I think your conscious mind is very good at protecting you initially, and you're almost in for me, I was almost in a bubble of numbness and just focusing on the practical things that the world
Yeah,
could
and
do.
there are so many practical things to focus on, isn't there? And
Yeah,
I guess
absolutely.
even more so the fact that there were two lots of practical thing,
Yeah.
both for your mum and your stepdad too.
Yeah.
And without the ease of having the surviving one to help, just being able to track down policies or
Absolutely.
things like that they may have had.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, luckily they were both very organized, but it was a case of three of us sort of having to puzzle piece things together, so that we could go through the official process of registering the death first, the deaths firstly, and going through probate and all of that. And yeah, and then of course clearing the house and selling the house and arranging the funerals and so that was actually created a really strong buffer of about 3 or 4 months where the whole practical side of things was just the priority, and there was very little time to process things emotionally, I think.
Just so they had a funeral each, or did you do a
But they
joint
had a
one?
joint funeral, yeah, which
Which
was
kind
very
of feels very
beautiful.
apt that, yeah. Gosh, yeah.
And then myself and my husband and my daughter, we held a not a memorial service, but sort of a celebration of their life. It was actually on February the 1st, so 10 months later, with a priest that we he's actually a Druid priest and an ex-Anglican priest, and he married us, and he also held our daughter's blessing. So we felt that it was only right for him to do a service for us. So we held our private service with him at our home,
Oh,
and we
beautiful.
co-created that with him, and that was extremely beautiful. Yeah,
And the 1st of February being in bulk is a
exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
special time, isn't it?
it is, and we chose that because it's of course the return of the light, and it felt like a really beautiful time to honor their transition to the light. So yeah, thank you for picking up on that. And I think looking back, a big thing for me was, as you say, being that geriatric mum and
Oh,
being
such a horrible term,
parent.
isn't
It's a horrible
it?
term, but it's certainly apt in our case. My husband, he won't mind me saying, but he was 52 when she was born. So, yeah, being that and being a business owner, and then having that sort of the support network really taken with them, because they were our main source of childcare, because of our age. And so there was that additional struggle to maintain the businesses and of course care for my daughter. So yeah, it was that first sort of couple of years were extremely intense. And COVID then happened the year
Oh goodness,
after.
yes.
So which brought another layer for everybody, didn't it? We just we just went into coping mode, didn't we? So
Yes. And that must have been, difficult as well, I guess, because I don't know, was it harder to build up a network of other kind of first-time mums because of perhaps the difference in your age? That I wonder then, was your mum then kind of like, did she play that sort of role in terms of being support for you and, and advice
Oh,
and
she
things?
was.
So to have not then had that during lockdown, when it was such an isolating time for people.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah, I mean, it was. And, my mum and I were so close. We still are. She's still with me, just not in the physical. But yeah, we were so close. And yeah, she was my go-to. So all of a sudden, that wisdom had gone. And I have to say, I'm very lucky to have a wonderful mother-in-law as well, and a great sister-in-law. But yeah, because of being an only child, it was very, yeah, it was very isolating. And it was a steep learning curve. I always say I had to grow up very quickly. It taught me to grow up. I had to be completely independent, which was no bad thing, actually. And you kind of, and I don't know whether you found this, Rachel, but you find this inner strength that you don't know that you had, and it comes in various ways, and you don't always feel strong. I mean, I can remember so many times when I felt absolutely the opposite. But looking back in retrospect, you think, my goodness, managed to keep the business going. And I had 10 employees at the time as well, and sort of keeping their families going, and their, I was very mindful of them. And so yeah, and I think looking back, actually, that sort of delayed my grieving process, because, and I'm sure this is what a lot of people must have found if they've had a loss during COVID, because we were so in coping mechanism, just survival mode, weren't we? That everything else sort of took a back seat. So we didn't really have the luxury to process emotions and to process, trauma. So it's almost as though we sort of come through this, and then there's almost sort of a PTSD at the end of it that then you have to kind of start to deal with.
I think for me as well, it was a sense of, I mean, not that I did lose anybody during that time, but it was kind of almost a feeling that there were so many people who were experiencing loss that it kind of, I don't know, it to me it just kind of felt like, well, you like I can't share anything that I'm going through because I know that there are people having far worse times. So in a way, although it was something that we were all in together, it felt very alone.
Absolutely. Now, that's such a good point. And it's that sort of, it brings home, doesn't it? I think firstly, it helps us to see, to deepen into the gratitude that we've, and the positives that we learn, take from the experience. But on the flip side of that, there's almost a denial of permission to self to have those feelings, because, as you said, there's that comparative energy, isn't there? And it's like, well, actually, they're much worse off, so I'm not allowed to feel my sadness and my grief. And I think that was, that's a really, really important point, because everybody's grief and trauma is valid. And, there's no scale with which to measure it, is there? Everybody is absolutely entitled to their process, and to feel what they need to feel and to go through. So, but we as humans sometimes, deny ourselves that. So yeah, it's a really,
Because I always think the extent of the grief that you perhaps feel for any person or thing or situation is is actually more to do with your personal relationship with it and how much, I suppose, like, it's like they say, grief is the price that you pay for love, and it's, how much you love that, and that can't be measured against anybody else's love for whatever they love and would, potentially have feelings of grief for. So yeah, it's I think there is a tendency to sort of compare and say, gosh, that must have been really awful in comparison to mine. But it's, yeah, you can't measure it, because the love that we feel is the love that we feel for something, and it's that can't be compared to anybody else's love.
Yeah, exactly. And love is love, isn't it? And this is, I don't, I mean, I don't know about you, but I think for me, it was this feeling of the vibration of love is so, it's so powerful and it's so needed, because otherwise the opposite, and I think COVID brought this into such close, sharp focus, the opposite of that, the opposite of love as we know isn't hate, it's fear. And we had so much opportunity to sink into fear. That to be able to absolutely sometimes recognize that that's the case, but then to say, actually, I choose love over fear, is an absolute gift, that COVID gave us. And yeah, the grieving process, definitely it brought up, it does bring up such anxiety, doesn't it? And it's, it's that sort of, for me, it was that sort of allowing myself to feel that, but then also realizing that I have the ability to choose a different feeling. And I can choose love, I can choose joy, but I can also allow myself to experience the anxiety and fear, because if you don't, that's when it can become stuck and can create ill health, disease, depression, chronic problems, really. So
Absolutely, so important not to suppress those feelings, because they need to be worked through to be, I suppose, released in a way, so that you can then, I suppose, have more capacity then to feel even more love and gratitude. But yeah, really, really important to acknowledge those. And it sounds a little bit like maybe, certainly I would say there was a very definite kind of 5-year delay that I had on particularly allowing
Really?
myself to grieve. So it sounds like you sort of maybe had that similar thing. As you say, you've got all those practicalities to get through first of all, and then perhaps there's a period where it's like, well, you just have to get on with life, and particularly then thrown into those COVID years.
Good video. Yeah, 5 years, gosh, that is a long time, isn't it? Yeah, and I think for me it was probably about 3.5 years, and I've always been a big believer in gratitude and the power of gratitude, and but I realized that, in fact, it was an incident, if I can tell you about an incident where I realized that I had been denying myself the grieving process, and then how it started.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, I know, a beautiful lady, Astara Jane Ashley. She's a publisher, and she was, she's someone that I know from my priestessing work, and she was creating an anthology, a women's anthology of stories called Turning Point, and it was about it was inviting women to share their moments of change that shifted their lives. So, and she asked me whether I'd like to write a chapter. So I instinctively said yes, and I didn't know what I was going to write about, but something was saying, yes, this is really important for you. So I said yes, no idea what I was going to talk about. And I thought, maybe I'll talk, maybe I'll write about becoming a first-time mum, because that was a big turning point. Anyway, as I deepened into the process, it became clear to me that this, my mum and stepdad's story, wanted to be told through me. And that what became the start of my grieving process, really. Because I was able, by writing about it, not only to process the emotions. I remember I used to take myself off to, we live about an hour away from a beautiful beach, and I took myself off and just wrote, and just sort of free wrote, really, automatic writing almost. Used to write on the beach and wrote this chapter. And one of the gems that came through was not only that it started my grieving process and allowed me to feel the depth of loss and the depth of the grief. It gave me a kind of an official reason to do it, if you like, an
Yeah.
official permission to, it's okay because you're writing about it, you've got to feel it, you know. But it also brought up the lesson, one of the lessons, the life lessons that I feel that I gained from loss, which was that it helped me to align to my soul's purpose, and it allowed me that clarity and that focus to think, do you know what? It's time to stop messing about now. You know, you never know when your time's up.
Yeah.
And you know, if and I wanted for my daughter as well to step into alignment, to model her to her what it means to be living your life on purpose. So for me, that was my sort of, it was my turning point where I started the grief process. And it wasn't until I started that I realized that I'd almost been living in denial of the what had happened, really, and kind of couching it in terms of gratitude, which wasn't a negative thing, but that was the only focus. You know, I was grateful that they passed quickly. I was grateful that they went together. I was grateful that they didn't suffer. I was, but I was also heartbroken. So that for me was a big shift. Saw a big shift, and of course, it wasn't just a one. It's not just a one done deal, is it? It's We were talking before we came on, weren't we, about grief not being a linear process,
Absolutely. And I
and
love the egg analogy. Do you want to share
the egg
that?
analogy. Yeah, let me see. So, yeah, lovely lady that I went to take some counselling from shortly after their passing described to me the process of grief as being not a linear process, but being like a fried egg. In the sense that you've got this sort of central grief, and then around this, which is the yolk, and then around it you have the tumult of emotions and processes that are certainly not linear. They don't have a hard edge. They flow, and we can move in and out through this process for many years, as you know, Rachel. You know, and we mustn't expect ourselves to be at a certain point along the process of grief, you know, and measure it by linear time, because it's, well, I think it's probably always with us, and it's how we interact with that process, and giving ourselves that grace and that ease, and the space to be in that process. So
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
makes
I mean,
sense.
yeah, definitely. And that's, yeah, such an interesting analogy. And just that point that, you know, you never get to the point where you're done with it, you know. And as I was saying to you earlier, it's like, so it's been 24 years now since I lost my husband. And, you know, 99% of the time, you know, I'm perfectly sort of okay with it. But then just these last few days, I was on a fairly intense training course and I felt drawn to share within a wider group, just that I had been widowed. And I knew that I was going to do it and I'd kind of thought through my mind what I was going to say. But when it actually came to do it, I mean, I was just couldn't believe the wave of emotion that came up. And you know, that's 24 years on, and with a sense that actually, and actually within the context of me sharing it, was to actually say that that was a, you know, a stable fulcrum within my life around which I'd organize a lot of stuff. But you know, even within its stability, doesn't mean that there's not still emotion attached to it that sometimes just comes out the blue and hits you. And but then in a way, that's kind of almost a bit of a comfort sometimes that I still experience that, so that it's not that, like I've not forgotten him. I've not, it's still. It's still, very much there as a part of me, but just not, present in the most of my everyday life. But yeah, it's still very much a part. So yeah, that was a really interesting experience to have had.
Well, really honouring that because it's, yeah, and it's, it was interesting that, as you said, that you'd prepared yourself and your conscious mind was very aware of what you were doing, but then, that emotional trigger of it was obviously time for that reconnection to those feelings, and there was something that wanted to be released. So bless you. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. So within that sort of turning point that you had, was that and that sort of realization that you then wanted to live your life sort of aligned with your true purpose, was that at the point when you had you already were you already doing things like working with angels and all that sort of spiritual work that you were doing? Were you already doing that, or was that at the point where it really took off?
Yeah, thank you. That's a really interesting question. It's yes and no. I was almost sort of living and blessed to be living kind of a dual life. I taught yoga for sort of 25 years anyway, and I'd always had a very deep personal and private spiritual life that I'd not really yeah, not really shared with an awful lot of people. And alongside that, I am very lucky to have run a business, a recruitment business. And about, I think it was about a year before, 2 years before they passed, I had this call that I wanted to help to others to live their best lives and to align with their higher self, because I don't know where this came from, but I just had this urgency that now was the time for people to do this, obviously pre-COVID. So I qualified as a life coach. I qualified as an Akashic Records reader. But I hadn't actually considered those as something that was viable really for me to follow as a career. And also I had this, this beautiful business. That was sort of already on the back burner, and I knew that my mum was really proud of that, and both of them actually had always celebrated my spirituality and the fact that I followed my, my calling there. So I knew that that was something that they were very sort of happy about. But it was that focus, I think, that of the passing and of bringing my daughter rather, deciding to arrive, that catalyzed the process. So yeah, so then I sort of really sort of crystallized the idea that I would love to be able to step away from my day-to-day business, and allow, some beautiful souls who are in the business with me, who are really good friends, and to let them step into more senior roles so that I could then pursue this. And that happened, actually in ceremonial space. I was in a women's temple in Glastonbury with my mentor, and we were in this beautiful temple space with I think about 30 other women, and I stepped forward, and I can remember it now. I was shaking, I was crying, and I made this declaration to my higher self. This was the middle of June, and I made this declaration to my higher self that I would step away from the running of my day-to-day business for the highest good of all and for my highest good by Samhain by the end of October. And that was it. Within a month it had happened.
Had
It
you
was
got a, was this
incredible.
something that was kind of like out of the blue? Had you had a, had you got a plan in place when you made
No,
that
I hadn't got a
declaration?
plan in place at all. And I'd been trying sort of to do it, but I'd always been pulled back into the business. Obviously, the timing wasn't right, but I was getting frustrated because I knew specifically that my colleague and my good friend was ready to step in. But circumstances, external circumstances, kept pulling us back in. So within a month we had the conversation, we set up plans. And it just, she was so happy. Everybody was happy. And it just, the business just flourished. So, and then I was able from that point to step into coaching more deeply. I then actually trained as an angel healer and teacher. And stepped into the podcast came about. And my deepening with the angels in particular actually became more and more profound, and that's brought so much more magic into my life. And I realized that actually during my fertility journey, they were always with me. I just can I just share a story about
Yeah.
the angels and my
Please do, please do.
whilst I we were waiting for my daughter. I was having fertility treatment, and I saw this this one particular day. I saw this beautiful. I felt this beautiful presence, and I saw this in my mind's eye. This beautiful pink, orange, golden light, and I just knew in my heart. I knew that I was going to be a mom, and I'd not known. And it was something that I so dearly wanted. Anyway, it came to pass, and I was pregnant. I had a wonderful pregnancy. I was healthy all the way through, bringing this up to the pregnancy and up to the 16-week scan, because I was so impatient. I had to know whether she was going to be a girl or a boy. I was convinced that she was going to be a boy, and I was going to call her Gabriel. And this name, Gabriel, was just, there was just no way. I'd got a list of 21 girls' names and one boy's name, and it was Gabriel, and that was it. Anyway, we had the scan, and she was obviously going to be a girl. And it wasn't until after she was born that I realized Gabriel is the angel that helps with fertility and protects children. And I went back in my mind to that feeling of when I knew and that beautiful light that I saw, and it was him.
Oh, that's
That's
beautiful.
why that name Gabriel was in my head. So I just had to share that because it was that sort of linked into the whole process. So through that, now I've stepped in and do. I'm so blessed to be able to lead this soul aligned life for 80% of the time, and the other 20% I work in the business, so my other business, and it's just unfolded so beautifully and with so much ease and so little struggle. So there's a real lesson there about sort of making that declaration to yourself, to your higher self, and then just stepping back and allowing it to happen. Not surrender. So,
Yeah,
yeah, sorry,
just
that was a very long
trust
answer.
in. Yeah. Oh, it was a beautiful answer. I had certainly made the connection with Gabriel as being one of the sort of the angels, but not in the context of being in relation to children. So, how beautiful.
I know, amazing. So, and
So
these
you
six.
were, oh, no, go on.
Sorry, God, I was just saying these synchronicities, once you start to notice them, you realize how much support is always there for us, but we're so busy and so caught up in what we're doing sometimes that we're blind to them, and that was a real deep awareness for me.
Yes. Yes, when you can look back with sort of aha moments and go,
Yes.
oh, so that was why that happened, or that I
Yeah.
met this person, or
Exactly. Exactly.
just being able to trust that. But as you say, having that also that sort of capacity, whether, it's time capacity or energy, just to be able to step back and really think about those things, because so often, and particularly possibly in the times that we need it most, we're just kind of running headlong, just trying to keep our heads above water
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
keep things going.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's I think we all know it deep down, but actually just creating that space, something I've started to do quite recently, and this is shocking really, as I've taught yoga for so many years, is to give
Confessions of a yoga teacher.
I know, it's to give myself 10 minutes before I start my day to just empty out and to just meditate. For me, meditation has always been to have be that in stillness and to just not do anything and just to empty that out. I've always found that incredibly challenging. So I've always done sort of more moving meditations, like walking in nature and, doing yoga, which is, of course, is great. But sometimes the potency of just being still and emptying out is so powerful, just those 10 minutes a day before you start your day. And it's that then that the magic flows in and the support flows in, and you start the day from a really clear perspective, and so that you can open to the magic, and you don't feel that hurried energy that we often do, because we've got so much to do, and linear time has sped up for sure, hasn't it? The last couple of
Yeah,
years. So
definitely.
yeah. So I just wanted to give people that tip. If you can carve out just 10 minutes and just pop it on your phone, just set the timer on your phone, and if you can just have that 10 minutes of stillness, it's so powerful. Unbelievable. But yeah, it is
And it's
when
sort of
you
intentional stillness, isn't it? Rather than just
yes
saying, I'll allow another 10 minutes on snooze.
yeah exactly and that sort of that alert awareness, so really sort of emptying, consciously emptying the mind and just bringing the awareness back to the breath, and it is a real discipline. It's for me it was hard to do a minute of that. It really was to start with, but it's a practice, and when you're able to still that conscious mind, that's when the depth of, you can start to hear the inspiration from all the support that's there for us, and your internal self, your higher self. It's amazing.
There's something beautiful about stillness, isn't there? And whilst those, those movement things are so powerful as well in that own way, I
Yeah.
think sometimes there can perhaps be the potential to actually just be focusing on movement, or focusing on nature, or whatever that, or maybe on the music, whatever your form of meditation is within something else, that
Yes.
actually you don't necessarily get that, just that stillness to be able to, to process, either in terms of letting go of or allowing creativity to come through.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's such a value in, being out in nature, I believe, and processing stuff through the body. I mean, this is incredibly
Sure,
important, I
absolutely.
think, to be able to do, especially now as we're getting so many beautiful light codes coming through, to be able to process them and to release the stuckness of the, guilt, grief, and as trauma can be literally held in the physical body. And without that release, it can cause real emotional, physical, mental issues chronically. So Yeah, so it is all of that is wonderful, but yes, that stillness too, in addition to those, is a supercharge.
Yes, yeah. Oh, yeah, I like that. A supercharge. Yeah. So you mentioned that you do work with Akashic Records, and it's something that I think I understand, but I'm not sure. And I suspect that some of my listeners will be in the same position as me, that they might have heard of it, but not really sure what that's all about. So can you just give us a quick run through of what they are and how they can help?
Yeah, sure. No, thank you for bringing that up. And yeah, so I'll explain it how I understand them. And I think everybody has a different kind of take on what they are, but essentially everybody has a set of Akashic records. Even an inanimate object has an Akashic record. So, the chair that we're sitting on, the building that we're in. And what they are is, I suppose the easiest way to understand them is as energetic imprints. So, every thought, deed, action that our souls have engaged with since their incarnation, and depending on your belief system, that's the beginning of this life or the beginning of, your soul's inception, thousands of lives before. Each one of those is held in the Akash, the set of energetic records that are held there. And when you think about that, I mean, it's quite mind-blowing because, and this is why we don't have the access to all of the information straight away. We have to go through a process to access the information. If you think about it, if we knew all of that straight away, our minds would literally be blown. So when we access the Akashic records, we have the ability then to understand anything that we wish to understand or heal within this lifetime or past lives. And we don't actually always need to know whether it's this life or a past life or even a future life. When we present, if we're going for like a healing, for example, in the Akashic Records, we can present an issue, and then the guidance that comes through when they're opened, that there are guides that hold our records, spiritual guides that hold our records, and when they bring the information through and the healing through, it's so powerful, and it's always brought through with such love. But it's always appropriate to what we need, and it's never more than we can handle, But it may be from this life, it may be from a past life, but it's always very pertinent. And by following that specific process, we're able to get this focused support. That so it's an unlimited. I always love to see it as the British Library and that sort of lovely spiral staircase and all those dusty tomes of leather bound books. I always love to see it like that. And we're sort of, when we're accessing the Akashic records, we're literally pulling a book off the shelf and reading and using that to heal. So that's my explanation of it. Does that sort of resonate?
I was certainly on the right line, so
Yeah.
that's good. So yeah, thank you
Oh,
for that lovely
you're welcome.
explanation. So what would you say from all of that experience from losing your mum and stepdad, so suddenly, and then trying to deal with that grief during COVID, which came on sort of fairly soon after? What would you say has been the biggest lesson that you've learned from that?
Very good question. I think the biggest, Rachel, and this is just coming to me now, is trust. Trust in the process and to trust in the love that you always held in. And it doesn't always feel like that at all. And, we can feel desperate and anxious and alone and utterly alone. But it's that for me, it's that because my mum was such a presence in my life and a loving presence in my life when I had that gone. And I'm sure a lot of people can resonate with this. It's almost as though you sort of you're shoved into this place where you're just so alone and so unsupported. And that's, for me, that was my initial feeling until I realized, wow, there is so much support. Your angels are always there, your spiritual guides are always there. And the more you trust into the process of being held and surrendering into, do you know what? I don't have to control this process because I don't know all the answers. Magic happens and you're surrounded. People come into your life that support you, kindred spirits, teachers come into your life, circumstances conspire to align with your highest good, with your soul's, best interests. But it takes practice to actually encourage to rest in that surrender and that trust. So for me, I think that's a big thing. And that didn't come straight away, I have to say.
No.
One of the things that I got from my mum, and I there were quite a few incidences of them, my mum and stepdad, making themselves known after they left. There's a pair of buzzards that fly above our house, which I always recognise as them, and just little signs. And through one of my spiritual mentors, it was about 6 months after my mum passed, she delivered this very short message to me, and I keep it with me always, and especially now as it's spring and I can hear the birds outside. If I could just share you this with you, and this was such a comfort for me. She said, "I'm in the song, I'm in the birds, I'm in the breeze."
Oh, that's beautiful.
And that's it for me. She's always there. And now I'm getting emotional.
Oh,
It's
but
that
yeah.
trust that we can't physically be with them, but they are always here with us. And we have so much love and support, that we can't see. But when we allow ourselves that stillness and that trust, we can start to connect and to feel it.
Yeah.
So.
Oh gosh, what a beautiful message to have received
Yeah,
to know
I
that.
know. That
That's
was
really beautiful.
lovely. Thank you. Yeah. And yeah, it was lovely. And she knows I love music as well. So she put, I'm in the song first.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. Did you get any sort of validations, Rachel? Do you get see,
No, it's something that I really haven't. However, I did speak to it was one of the a previous guest on the podcast, and when my husband passed, it was I'd had 5 years because he'd had a terminal diagnosis for 5 years, so I'd had 5 years of kind of almost, preparing in a way as much as you can do. But when he did actually pass away, there was probably it was at home, and it was probably 2 hours of from when he fell unconscious to when he actually passed. And my neighbour and very good friend, and at the time she was an A&E nurse, was with me, and she kind of really it was I mean it was beautiful, if such a thing can be beautiful. It really was. And so I spent those 2 hours, talking, expressing love, just. And so the guest that I spoke to earlier, sort of explained it, well, maybe in a way, all those, because we had those 2 hours just before we passed, that actually maybe everything that we needed to say, and although in a way it was a one-way thing because he was already unconscious, but maybe that was sort of already, a lot of it was expressed and felt and just kind of known. So that's kind of brings me comfort when I think, gosh, I don't think I have really had very many signs, or perhaps I have, and I just haven't picked up on them. I don't know, but that kind of seemed to fit and to resonate as a reason why.
That's beautiful. No, that really is beautiful at that time. Yeah. As you said, there's such a beauty as amongst that, the sadness. But yeah, I'm sure he heard everything. Oh, that's gorgeous.
So I
Yeah.
kind of want to, I mean, in a way, I want to end it there, because that, to end it on that sort of beautiful message from your mum. But I suppose there's just a little bit of me that just wants to say, sort of on a practical level,
Yeah.
how could somebody, how do you start that process of just surrendering and trusting? How might somebody who perhaps hasn't, isn't in touch with their spirituality, how might somebody start that process?
Yeah. I think small steps, isn't it, Rachel? Really, I think, the whole process is so overwhelming and can be so depleting, that I think one of the biggest things is to give ourselves that love for what we're going through and what as souls and spirits what we're going through. So I think firstly a great And this is something that unfortunately we're not taught to do, because we're taught to, especially as women, to put everybody else first before we look after ourselves in this society. So I think little things like giving yourself time to have that luxurious bath, to be quiet, to listen to your favorite piece of music, to allow yourself to read, to allow yourself to maybe, I don't know, go out with a friend for lunch or something like that, and to start putting yourself first is really important. And I think when you realize that's actually not selfish, because that's another thing, self-care is often attached to selfishness. Once you realize that actually by looking after myself, I'm not only able to process what I'm doing and to experience that trust, but I'm also able to be more effective as a friend, as a parent, as a daughter, as a son, as a spouse. I think that's a really important first step, and that's something that often we forget when we're in grief, because we're in such a state of distress that the thought of even having a shower some days can be too much, so I think giving that piece of self-care and making that a regular dedication to yourself, and then also, stepping into that trust and sort of maybe reminding yourself that you don't have to carry everything on your shoulders, but leaning into that support that is there, and if you're offered any help, actually sort of taking that with gratitude and with grace and with love, and that starts this sort of, this energy of reciprocity. So, it's not just you taking, or it's not just you giving, but it's this energy flow between you and other souls around you. And then, latterly, maybe more, you start to connect with your guides, that's that we're in that flow. And once we're able to get into that flow, and again, it's easier said than done, but it's a a gradual process, we realize that we're part of the bigger picture, and there's so much support with us. So it's little things. So if someone asks you, would you like to go out for lunch and on Saturday? Oh yeah, that'd be lovely. And it's you're getting into that energy then of and you sort of joy, and even if it's just for 5 minutes, and sometimes that's enough in the early stages. So
Yeah,
yeah.
that's lovely. That's so important to remember, isn't it? That, even as you say, in the early stages of grief, we're still allowed to have moments of joy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really, really believe that our loved ones want that for us as well. I don't think they particularly want to see us suffer, any more than we need to. So
No, no.
that's my experience anyway, just my view.
Oh, thank you so much, Kirsty. Just been a beautiful conversation, and one that I will certainly go away and reflect on. And it's beautiful work that you do, and I can see the joy in your face talking about it, that it's to be able to be living your life on purpose, that I'm sure that your mum and your stepdad are with you and cheerleading you sort of all the way, and are pleased that perhaps through their loss that was that came out of it, and that you were able to do that, and helping your daughter and helping all those other beautiful people that you helped to live life in alignment. It's a wonderful thing to do.
Oh, thank you, Rachel. It's been an absolute pleasure to be with you, and a real honor. And yeah, I'm so happy to see you in such a good place too. So
Oh, thank
thank
you. So, and if people want to find you, they can find you at kirstyjandrell.com.
That's it. Yes, that's my website. And there's the podcast as well, the Angels, Magic and Joy podcast, but there's a link to that on the website. But yeah,
Super.
I'd love to
Yeah.
contact
I'll
anyone
put all that information in
who.
the episode notes so people can
Oh,
find it.
thank you.
And
Thank you so much.
thank you so much, Kirsty.
Oh, take care.
And
Thank
you.
you, everybody. Bye.
Thank you, Kirsty. That was such a beautiful conversation. And I'm sure for the listeners that has brought perhaps some comfort or maybe a sense of direction of where to find help with grief. If you'd like to find out more about Kirsty's work, you can find her at kirstyjandrell.com, and the details are in the show notes. Thank you to everybody who supports me in the production of this podcast, to Jamie Farrell for the beautiful music, and of course to you for listening. Take care, and I'll be back soon with another lesson from Lots.